Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we are joined by Ray McMahon, Senior Vice President of Payer Solutions at Prescriptive. Ray has extensive business experience in the pharmacy industry and is here today to discuss the costs and development of glucagon-like peptide 1 medications, or as most people know them, GLP-1s. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Ray.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be here and talk about this subject.
So today we'll be diving into how GLP-1 demand is booming amid access barriers for these life-changing medications. Overall, we'll be exploring the disconnect between GLP-1 visibility and viability. So Ray, can you start by summarizing the current trends surrounding GLP-1 use and cost? Basically, what events or trends have led to the public's current understanding of GLP-1s and their effects?
Certainly more drugs in market and more drugs coming to market. A lot of marketing around these specific products, not only for weight health, but other indications that are coming. And these marketing efforts going direct to consumers, whether they meet the clinical criteria or not. And then I would say a third component of this is a number of companies that look to prescribe these medications, either these specific pharmaceutical agents or those that are compounded, even though the access to these medications, they have fixed a lot of the access issues. We still do see some companies utilizing compounded medication with the B12 additive agent. So still a lot of conversation around the products, the right products, and a big part being affordability.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I appreciate you kind of setting the background for what GLP-1s are kind of doing right now in the marketplace. You mentioned advertising. Wanted to kind of talk about that briefly. How has increased advertising for these medications translated to patient outcomes as well as the public's overall perception of this drug class?
Yeah, I think the hard thing about it is they've certainly alerted patients to the medication, potential patients to the medication. There are varying degrees of clinical parameters that patients should meet to be on these medications. And one thing that I am lacking to see, and I would really love to see someone do this, is a correlation between those that meet the clinical endpoints for that, meaning they meet the BMI requirements primarily in sleep apnea, other comorbid conditions, but equating that to specifically what their copay would be for this medication. There's a lot of research out there that there is not adherence measures to these medications and that they have not met their specific outcomes. And I believe that the primary driver of that is access to affordable copays and or coupons that would allow that member to continue to get the drug. And I have not seen that, but I feel that that is one of the biggest barriers to make sure that the right person intended for the medication and meeting those clinical parameters can afford it as well and know where they can get it. And that's a challenge that we're facing today.
Talking about those challenges, wanted to just dive a little bit deeper into the challenges of access and development. So what are kind of the overarching challenges that you've observed and how will these issues potentially impact the greater population?
Yeah, I think that some of the challenges are just how are these drugs reimbursed? Are they covered under insurance? Do I have to pay cash? Do I have to be in a weight health program to access these medications? What pharmacy do I go to get the medication? And will my insurance cover it or do I need to use a coupon at the same time? And how do I even enroll in that coupon? And what do I do if I need to increase my dose, decrease the dose, and then I'm having side effects, primarily nausea-related conditions, and ensuring that they have the adjunctive therapy to help out with some of those other side effects that can happen when they're taking this medication. That's one of the biggest issues is around the access and also helping employers determine who is the right population within their employer base to have access to these medications and how can they afford it as an employer as well. And so if we think about just the cost of these medications between $500 and $1,000 per month, if the member has to pay a significant portion of that, I would say those that need it, generally really need it, are not necessarily in a position to pay for it.
Awesome. Yeah. Obviously, with the increased advertising and kind of just the sheer like understanding, the public understanding of GLP-1s, if that's existing without kind of that provider counseling and moving patients along, it brings up these challenges. So kind of wanted to move aside from patients to the people that are giving patients these medications. So how have community pharmacies and their pharmacists been impacted by the increase in GLP-1 popularity?
Gosh, I give those pharmacies a lot of credit because I think you have a full gamut of patients that are looking to get these medications. And really, you could say that they're miracle drugs. They really provide help to those that need it, but you will also have those that don't necessarily meet those clinical parameters to have it covered under insurance. So I've seen pharmacists in action, and they're trying to navigate whether the drug is covered or not covered. What benefit is it covered under? Is it a limited benefit? Is it their pharmacy benefit, or is it even something else? And then is there a prior authorization at the same time? Do they have to go out through the prior authorization before they can get the medication? And then on top of that, then is there a coupon that they should be utilizing to afford the medication? And that, all of those amount to a huge administrative nightmare, in my opinion, for those community pharmacists and pharmacies and having to help navigate patients through an amazing drug. It's at a higher price point and so many varying degrees of coverage via insurance and direct access and coupons that make it really challenging. And I can imagine that even if their reimbursement is a little bit higher, these take so much time. I can't imagine that they would say that they're fruitful for them to even fulfill in some capacity because of the challenges around them.
Awesome. Yeah. And obviously with the patient challenges, and then that kind of overlaps with the pharmacies as far as, like you said, co-pays and insurance and what covers it. And pharmacies, they're kind of the medication authorities. They're not necessarily the people that have to know these administrative tasks, like you said, but it comes with these drugs because they're so popular. So I think that kind of falls in line with where PBMs fall in all of this. So kind of wanted to just ask you about that. And in regards to patient access, pharmacies dispensing them, where do PBMs kind of fall in line with GLP-1s?
Yeah, it's another one where there's a full gamut. There's PBMs that have it covered as part of their coverage. And a lot of times the employer making the decision to include that and then also determining the right clinical criteria that they're managing to. Are they managing to label and then going through that process? And then some PBMs have preferred products out there. But I would say when they do cover the products, oftentimes you have to meet clinical criteria. And then oftentimes these employers also have a weight health or an obesity management program that you have to enroll in at the same time. So you have this dynamic of drug covered under pharmacy benefit, potential program covered under medical benefit, and then these different copay levers between the two, which then also makes it a little bit challenging. Where I've seen success is where these medications are covered under a limited benefit offering, or even like a lifestyle management benefit offering where the employer requires the members to meet clinical criteria, but they're able to give some members some flexibility in the coverage of these medications. And it's a lot more coordinated and focused rather than it going through the general PBM flow and population because of all the different levers and because of the cost and really wanting to support members that need this medication versus those that would prefer to have it and not necessarily needing those clinical criteria. So a large gamut, but I found the most success in when there's a program that really limits the coverage, not from an accessibility perspective, but can be more concierge level to help members through all of the hurdles they have to get through to get this medication.
Cool. So I think this has been a good conversation about kind of the issues with GLP-1s right now. And I want to talk about kind of your role with Prescriptive and how you're combating that. But before moving on, it seems like with the rising popularity of GLP-1s, everyone involved just has to kind of deal with the complexities that it presents as the popularity rises. Would you agree with that?
I do agree. And I hope we can get to a better level to relieve some of those challenges. I don't know the last time that we've seen a drug in market that provides this level of clinical value where there's not just one drug in market, there's a few drugs in market, there's more drugs that are coming, and the dynamic of what you have to pay is drastically different across different plans. And so it is very complex, and I feel like this sheds light on the challenges that we have within the pharmacy ecosystem. My role at Prescriptive is to help employers understand how they can have truly a pharmacy benefit. That is a benefit, and leveraging our transparent and pass-through component, but also our technology that empowers the member at point of prescription. And so we want to avoid the challenges at the pharmacy counter, whether it's virtual or in person. And we want that member to have the information they need so they know how much it costs, where can they get it, do they have to have a prior authorization, and relieve that headache at that point in time, similar to the shopping experience that we now appreciate for other consumer goods. This is a perfect storm for us to apply that same logic and utilize the technology that we have to help that member, that pharmacist, that physician, that employer ensure that they are truly providing benefits to their pharmacy coverage.
Cool. So yeah, I think that's kind of great how you guys are kind of stepping in. Just want to, you kind of touched on some of the technologies. Can you basically just wrap this up with what tools or the ways in which Prescriptive really is helping either patients or pharmacies kind of navigate all of these challenges that we've talked about?
Absolutely. So it's twofold. One, we talk about the affordability of the medication and what type of benefit offering, whether it falls under PBM or a limited benefit offering. And we talk about what we see as the appropriate copay to provide adherence to these medications and access, initial access. So that is one component, just the overall benefit offering for the employer. The second component of that is the technology where the prescription gets sent to the member's phone. It's not an app. It gets sent to their phone so that they can see their prescription and they can understand their insurance coverage as well as any cash coverage at the same time. And the biggest component of that is it's not retrospective or after they're getting the medication, but it is pre them getting to the pharmacy. And that is a very important driver of empowering that member to have information, individualized information at their fingertips to avoid the chaos and them just saying, I can't afford it. I don't know where to get it. It's too much and I'm not going to take it. And that's really unfortunate for the outcomes that these medications provide. So we feel that's really an important driver of utilization of these medications, couple that with the right benefit design and the right technology to support it. And of course, the clinical parameters in between, but all of that needs to be really coordinated.
I couldn't agree more, especially with the sheer kind of uniqueness, for lack of a better word, with these medications and their rising popularity. I really appreciate you taking the time today. I kind of want to just give you a last chance to really give us like your hopes for GLP-1 access and development in the future.
Yeah, overall, I would like to see these medications. I would like to see the cost come down. I would like to see some studies in place around the efficacy of the medication related to the copay. And I would really love to challenge us as a pharmacy community to make sure that we have the right tools so that these members can access that. And then another one, that we take away the administrative burden around the access to these medications, because it just puts unneeded barriers in place for those that need the medication. So overall, I would land on those things. Let's see how we can help out from a price perspective. Let's make sure that we have the right design, and let's take out the hassles that are generally in play so that we can continue to see the benefits of this medication. Because right now, we don't see it. And we see that there's outcomes that are lacking, but I truly believe it's related to the cost of the medications and what members have to pay. So we need to work on that together. And I challenge folks to do that.
Very well said. I really appreciate you taking the time today. Obviously, this is a very important topic for such kind of an outlier event or instance that's really occurring in pharmacy right now. So I really appreciate it, Ray.
Thanks, Brian. It was wonderful talking to you. Happy to talk again about it. As we see more drugs in this class come out, it's just going to create more chaos until we fix it and have the right solution around it.
Thank you so much.